It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, they're both here. We're going to talk about the latest Apple news, iPhone 8 wireless charging. Could that even be possible? We're going to talk about the lawsuit about the App Store. Should Apple open up its iPhone to other app stores? And some great picks of the week, including a portal on your Apple II. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 542, recorded Tuesday, January 17th, 2017. Haptic insoles. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Jamf. Jamf provides Apple management software for Mac, iPad, and iPhone. Regardless of your organization's size or the complexity of your environment, Jamf can automate time-consuming tasks and reduce help desk tickets. Go to Jamf.com/MacBreak and get a free Jamf Pro trial or free Jamf Now account. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process. It's completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com and at checkout, select overnight shipping and enter the code MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, from his home in beautiful Montreal, Quebec.
Yeah, Leo, I was out walking, and it was so icy, I took out my iPhone to snap how icy it was, and ended up falling while I was snapping.
Yikes.
So, yeah, don't snap and walk is my new takeaway for
yikes.
This
yikes.
And teach your kids to break fall, just like you teach them to swim. Break falling, super important.
Oh, I think I taught my son to break fall too well. He sent me a video yesterday of him jumping off a roof. I don't know if I should.
Don't.
That's Andy Iannocco, who has the sense, the wisdom of age compared to my son, who has the wisdom of youth. You want to see him jump off a... Oh, jeez. You can just tell. I don't know. I have
might
a feeling.
He be of college age, Leo.
Yeah, he's in college. That's apparently the stupid stuff they do in college.
Well, he protected his head. That's the important thing. He protected his head.
You see, the people you worry about are people our age who are like, say, oh, wow, that boosted electric skateboard looks awesome
in
the videos.
Yeah, that's true.
And I used to skateboard when I was 17, 20 years ago. And then, yes, but you also had a 17-year-old's body that really, really is built for the stupid things you do when you're a teenager. So, yeah.
Andy's with the Chicago Sun-Times. It's great to see you both today. This is the slow time for Mac fans. Not much to talk about right now, right?
I can see you, Leo. I can see you from behind your computer this time.
Yeah, I don't have that horrible Windows thing in front of me.
Or that luscious giant touchscreen.
That's what I really like. I do love it, but I have to say, when I do Mac Break Weekly, it's a little bit of a disadvantage not to have a Macintosh. So if I wanted to show you, and in this case, my app cap, I need to show you something on the Mac. So app cap is what we call it on iOS today on the more mature show, our pick of the week.
Can you use VNC?
Huh?
Can't use VNC
for? Oh, I guess I could. Wow! Now you're getting mind fancy. Blood. Remote to remote desktop to a Mac somewhere out there.
Or use an iPad Pro to remote desktop to a Mac, then you have a touchscreen Mac.
What? U.S. appeals court revives antitrust lawsuit against Apple. I hate doing court stuff.
Can you believe this, Leo? Apps are too expensive. I mean, if we just had some competition, apps would be close to free or nothing now. I mean, I can't believe that developers have been completely price gouging people for so long.
Well, I'm not sure it has to do with that. I mean, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said, yes, this is a suit that was filed in 2012. you can have a class action lawsuit against Apple because iPhones can only run apps purchased from Apple's App Store. The group says that's anti-competitive. I think it's classic. Well, I think that is fairly classic monopolistic practice. It's like saying, you know, you can only, if you work in a coal mine, you can only buy your goods from the company store. You know, I mean,
yeah. I was being facetious. The legal difference here is that the previous judgment said you couldn't sue Apple, that Apple was merely an intermediary for the developers.
That was Apple's argument. Yeah.
You would have to go to the developers. And this overturned that and said, no, in fact, you can sue Apple for this issue. They're not saying whether the issue is right or wrong. They're just saying you can sue Apple.
Yeah. Lower court said that the customers didn't have standing to sue because you're purchasing directly from the developers. But I think the Ninth Circuit's correct because it's Apple that enforces this. You can only buy it from the App Store rule, not the developers. In fact, many developers would love to have a way not to go through the App Store, I would imagine. But certainly,
it'd be nice to have a sort of a legal jailbreak like you have on certain other phones. It's going to be interesting to see if this is there are a lot of these decisions that really define the fundamentals of the future of apps and technology. And it would be interesting if this went forward and the court basically said that if I've purchased a phone, I have the right to put anything I want on it, which doesn't require Apple to allow everything. But it would require a maker to say, well, there should be a switch buried somewhere in the menus that says that, okay, if you flip this switch, we're going to let you sideload apps from anywhere, and we're not going to give you system updates until you put that switch back in the position we want you to put it in. We're not going to necessarily support you if at the Apple Store if something breaks in a really, really bad way, but still we know that you own this phone, and if you want to run like Atari Linux on it, we will allow you to. You have the right to put Atari Linux on this phone. So it's a basic thing that I think really should be decided one way or the other.
Apple's argument against is probably similar to the argument against the Librarian of Congress when he said that it wasn't illegal to jailbreak an iPhone. Their argument is, well, that really impairs security, and we're trying to protect our customers, and so we make them go through our own store because we can vet every app in the store. As you know, Andy, because you use an Android phone, Android solves this by having a checkbox in kind of deep in the settings. It's not immediately obvious. The default is you can only buy from Google Play Store, but there is a checkbox. The default behavior, which is kind of interesting, is if you try to install an app from a third party, you can download it, obviously, an APK is the file format, and download it. When you do that, it says, all right, but this is from the third party. Do you want to disable our block? And when they do so, they disable it for one time only. So it's that, which I think this is a good way to handle it. That's for this install. If you go in the settings, you can turn it off permanently, but they then give you a big security warning saying, you know, you're on your own here. Make sure you're downloading from reputable sources and stuff. That's not the Apple way, but I thought.
Well, they do Gatekeeper on the Mac like that. I mean, it's
that's how they do it on the Mac, right?
Yeah. But on the Mac, but they don't do it on iOS.
Right.
I mean, I respect the point of view that says that we are going to give you the ability to totally destroy your life if you feel as though that's a risk worth taking. We are not your mom. We are not your dad. Even if we were your mom or dad, we would just simply try to tell you, please don't get a tattoo your first year of college, but you would be free to get that tattoo. Apple is like, we're going to make sure that we're going to laminate your entire body before we send you off to college,
right?
Because we're going to make it impossible for you to do something that we think you might regret, but you might think is the greatest thing ever.
The argument made, Rene, is the argument that the attorneys in this case, Pepper versus Apple, are making, which
is
it'll lower prices. But to me, I don't think that I agree with you. It's not how is that going to lower?
Well, no. So that's the thing, is that this lawsuit is not at all about the openness or the freedom to put applications. This is about money. And this is why it's targeted Apple, because Apple has very big pockets, and they're making the argument that because Apple has the App Store and you can't get apps from anywhere else, Apple is artificially making prices too high, which worked gangbusters when they went after Apple for the iBooks lawsuit. But here, I think it'd be tough. I mean, just ask any developer. It'd be tough to say that the App Store has artificially inflated software prices. In fact, the App Store is a huge contributor to the deflation, the race to the bottom.
Most developers would be really thrilled if Apple were to artificially inflate prices
so
everywhere.
I think that point is very important. Like the point about the free, like what Google does with Android versus iOS. But I don't think that's the motivation or the crux of this particular lawsuit.
Yeah, I don't want to impute this law firm, but it sounds like they're really interested in collecting damages. They say the other alternative is for Apple to pay people damages for the higher than competitive prices they've had to pay historically because Apple has utilized.
Can you imagine?
But that's how they're making
that
money.
People would owe Apple money.
It's a contingency fee lawsuit, right? So they want to get a big settlement. They don't really want to open the store. What they want is a big cash settlement so that they can take their percentage and walk away happy. And usually when in these cases, we've probably all received postcards. I remember getting a postcard because Pop Chips got sued and there was a class action settlement. And your 15-cent credit towards Pop Chips is in the mail. That's kind of how it works out. The users get nothing and the law firm gets most of it. I don't know if that's the arrangement.
And Apple's argument, I mean, you can get ready to laugh, but their argument has always been that the web is their open app store. Like you can develop for iOS in a secure way with complete access to the system. Or if you want, we have this completely open developer environment, back then called Web 2.0, now called HTML5. And you can do all sorts of fun things without having to worry about security requirements.
I have mixed feelings about this because, to me, it's more about, well, there's apps you can't put on the iPhone. Like, let's say a simple app, a Wi-Fi analytics program, which you could put on an Android device and you could put on a Mac, but you can't put on an iPhone because Apple seals off the Wi-Fi radio API.
Anything low-level, the audio low-level stuff like Audio Hijack does, the iStat menu stuff that Django does.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You think about all the cool stuff that third-party software can do on the Mac that Apple never considered, and you wonder how much better could the iPad be, how much better could the iPhone be if Apple allowed that kind of latitude to its own developers. And I like the gatekeeper system on macOS because, like Renee said, if you want to download an app, use an app that Apple has not blessed, it will let you do that. If you want to protect yourself against inadvertently downloading an app that may or may not be safe, you can also flip use the default setting and will not allow those things to run. But again, ultimately, it's up to you. I really can't think of I can think of so many apps that I'm running on the Mac from different window resize managers to, again, audio stuff that basically lets me create a virtual audio input device that can solve problems with a little piece of software that ordinarily would have taken me a $300 piece of hardware in order to fix. These are the sort of things you really have to let your community do, or else you're going to wind up with a very vanilla, very boring thing. I've been researching I'm only speaking about Android as a point of comparison, where if you really want to get insane about it, you can change the ROM of a Nexus phone. You can change everything about it. Like there's features that are in the Pixel, Google's house branded phone, that aren't available to any other phone yet, but you can download the source code, run a special ROM that other people have compiled, and essentially turn a 2-year-old phone into a Pixel phone with all the same features. And really, it's totally up to you. And there's a good chance you're going to brick your phone if you do that. And it's not a simple linear process. But if you're adventurous, or if you've just got a 2-year-old phone and you don't have $800 for a new one, but you do like these features, okay, spend a weekend tearing your hair out, and maybe by Monday you'll have something that works great. I really do think that the overarching principle is that you should have ownership of the device that you paid money for. And ownership is expressed not just by having a receipt and a bill of sale. It means that if there's something I don't like about this, if I'm willing to put in what might be considerable amount of work and take a considerable amount of risk, I should be able to do that. That's what ownership means.
The other side, because one cannot deny that the iPhone gets better battery life because of this tight control of apps that Apple asserts is not totally secure, but I would say much more secure than other platforms because of it. And as you say, Renee, they've been able to pressure app developers to lower the price over time.
Well, it's it's like, for me, it's super interesting because I would love, like, I'm with you guys. I'm like a power user. I would love a Konami code that just unlocked developer mode and let me do things with it. But I also recognize that I'm in the minority on this. I would personally love Apple to do this, but I think they would argue that their malware is like almost non-existent compared to some other more open platforms. And also that almost every one of the truly significant apps that have come out over the last decade, whether it's Facebook or Uber or Snapchat or anything that we would hold up as a revolutionary software, works great on an iPhone. The issues that people run into are things that are more fringe or more power user or specific niche user centric.
Yeah, obviously,
and they're willing to sacrifice that 2% in order to have a better experience.
I think that has more to do with when you're developing an iPhone app, you're targeting three pieces of hardware and not a lot more. Malware is a much more serious problem on the Android platform than iOS, certainly. But when you change the focus to how many Android users actually are affected by malware who are comparable to an iPhone user, meaning that they're not running like a 3 or 4 year old technology phone, they're not running a 3 or 4 year old operating system, they are buying apps directly from an app store where the content is controlled by Google. That's really not a big number.
I don't think the users
are giving up a whole lot by having this extra freedom, and the things that they can do. And I'm not talking about loading a bootloader or a custom ROM. I'm talking about saying what if the home screen did something other than give me a static tile of icons? What if it did this instead? I don't think that users are. I think users are getting a lot more than they're giving up in that instance. Again, it's ownership.
Yeah, I just think it's when Apple balances it out, that to them is a very, very small part of their market. Yep.
Well. to me, I'm 100% of my market
as a
consumer. I'm not. I really don't care what Apple thinks. That Apple says that you're not important, Andy. What you want, believe me, we spend way more time than you thinking about how you should be using your phone.
I think
that's absolutely true. Just give us your money.
I think that's absolutely true. But when I talk to people who used to like develop, like back in the days before the iPhone, they used to develop for Palm, and they would have 19 different websites they had to go to get their apps out in no good direction. And then also, like, I look at just my family using iPhones, and they just could not use the previous generation of smartphones. They do not know that they can't get apps from
they don't know what they're missing.
They wouldn't even care because the App Store is the easiest way for them to get those apps. So again, I just don't think it hits the majority of customers.
Ignorance is bliss. We've already seen, even with the relative freedom that you get that developers have on the Mac, you have developers like Rich Siegel who said, look, I'm spending way too much time from our perspective at Barebone Software dealing with BS that helps Apple but doesn't help us. We would like to spend more time improving our product. Instead, we're spending all of our time making our app compatible with new operating systems. And if that's a requirement for inclusion in the App Store, we're out.
Yeah.
And totally so it's a situation that's unique to Barebones, but they are able to make that decision as opposed to saying we're out, we're no longer supporting the Mac at all, because we have the ability to simply again flip a switch and run an app that wasn't sold by the App Store. So I'm saying
on the iPhone.
Right.
As a user of both platforms and a regular user of both platforms. I don't really feel like it's a big deal that Apple should be forced to allow that's part of the choice of Apple. I always, when people call me on the radio show all the time and say, well, how do I get an iPhone to do this? And I say, well, you don't, but that's, you chose a platform for that reason. And if you want an more open platform, there are other choices out there.
They're like a shopping mall who controls their tenants. It's not, you can't you just come and open up a store in the beginning.
Yeah, you don't get to choose. And that's the price you pay for using an iPhone. Of course, you know, you can also make the argument a lot of people just buy an iPhone without really thinking about that and then realize that.
Well, they might switch to an iPhone. If it bothers them, they might switch to Android and Apple loses that sale and they have to factor that into their overall decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, clearly it hasn't hurt Apple. In fact, it's helped Apple, hasn't it, really? I mean,
the easiest way to change Apple's mind on this is to have an app land on Android that just absolutely could not be done on iOS, and that to be such a popular app that it hurts them that it is not on their platform. Right. Then they would change their mind.
I can't think anything like that at this moment, although there are a lot of really useful apps that like Google Assistant and Now on Tap. You know, when you're using your Android device, if it supports Now on Tap, you can be on any page and then hold the voice button and it will look at the page and find contextual information related to that page. That's something you could not do on Apple without Apple have to do that. And Apple doesn't do that. And I think that that's... There are things, but an iPhone user is never going to know about them.
Because they're busy. They're happy with Uber and with Facebook and with Snapchat and with Pokemon Go. And
we know this. We know most people, for instance, don't install third-party apps.
HTC said most people don't use widgets, and the ones that they do use are the ones that were there when they bought the phone. I mean,
I'm watching
with
great interest. Megan Maroney's using an Android phone for the first time. She and Jason Howell switched. So Jason's using an iPhone for a month, and Megan's using an Android, a Pixel for a month. And it's interesting to watch as she kind of discovers these layer after layer of configuration options. And it's a lot.
And delightful.
I like it. Geeks like it,
it's
maybe.
It's a great show, yeah.
But I think normal people, it's like, well, that's too much. Most people still think of this as a phone with some internet capabilities.
Some people love building gaming machines exactly the way they want them. Some people just want to buy a box that turns on.
Yeah.
I don't think the two things are comparable. I think that if you don't want to customize Android at all, you don't have to. It will operate just like an iPhone.
I said you can make a grid of icons and just use it like an iPhone.
But there comes a point like 2 months into your ownership of a new car when you're like, ah, damn it. I really, really wish there were a cup holder right there.
Right.
And Chrysler will tell you, well, look, we've done so many surveys. People don't want a cup holder on the left side of the driver's seat. Say, okay, I don't care about all the people you talk to. I want one there. But you can actually put a cup holder on the left side of the driver's seat if you actually want to, as opposed to being told that we don't support that third-party stuff. We're not going to allow you to do that. We're not going to turn off warranty service. You're going to have to jailbreak your car to put a cup holder where you want it. And again, at the end of the day, this is your car. And a cup holder is such a simple thing to do. It goes back to something that I consistently have to sort of evaluate my reactions to. Whenever I hear that the various articulations of the phrase, well, people don't use that feature. Let's say that it's 5% of people who use a certain given feature that's being applied to. The thing is, it's never the same 5% for each feature. It's a mobile 5%. And by the time you're having conversations about 50 features, you are eventually covering maybe close to 100% of the user base that would like to do something but can't. And once you get into that situation, you need to have a hard conversation with yourself and decide, is it worth inconveniencing 100% of our users 5% of the time to introduce this limitation that we think is important? And there's, I think also, that oftentimes it's not a good trade.
There's also in the back of my mind a kind of a niggling feeling that Apple does some of these things not for security or reliability or consumers, but because for economic reasons. And I'll give you an example. This doesn't really relate to the App Store, but locking down NFC on the iPhone. On an Android phone, every app has access to the NFC chip, and so there's been there's all sorts of great uses of NFC on an Android phone, including pairing with devices. I can tap an Android phone to my camera and set it up automatically. You can't do that with an iPhone because Apple says the only thing NFC can be used for is Apple Pay. And, you know, they make an argument, I guess. Renee, you probably know the argument well, that this has something to do with the security of Apple Pay. But it seems to me that controlling the NFC chip is an example of maybe doing it for economic reasons.
My understanding is that it was funnier than that. It's like they've been thinking about doing NFC since Scott Forstall was still running.
I mean, they were slow to go to NFC.
Yeah, they were just like, well, it's not really that there's stuff we can do with Bluetooth. Well, we can use it. And the only reason they put NFC in was to make Apple Pay work, because Apple Pay just simply would not work with that NFC. So right now, the mentality is that we don't actually have NFC on the phone. It's just an implementation, what is it? An implementation detail of having Apple Pay.
Oh, how
and it's not something that they're ready to.
So we don't do NFC until we do. And then we'll go all crazy about how great NFC is.
Sure. But I mean, if they could have done it over Bluetooth, they would have.
Right.
Because it would have been one less radio.
Well, and it would be interesting to see if Apple does in fact go to wireless charging in the next generation iPhone, how they will trump it. You know, it's finally here, wireless charging.
But I'm so curious, what is going to be on the other end of that?
Fixed wireless charging. You're welcome.
It is funny, but if you go back to that Samsung wireless where they're saying, we don't have a cord, and you see that all the cords are plugged in to their little dongle, you still have to plug those dongles in. But what Apple's supposedly working on is distance charging, where you just walk in the room and it starts charging. But I still don't know what's on the other end of that. There has to be some Apple device that's providing that charge. And that to me is like the really interesting question. I know it's a tangent, but is it a new generation router? Is it a new generation Apple TV? Is it a new generation computer? What is spewing that power into my room?
Yeah. And I like, there's such a thing as a tactile user interface. We humans are very, very strange organisms that if you tell us that, don't worry, if you walk into your bedroom with this phone, it doesn't matter where you put the phone, it's going to be charged by the time you wake up tomorrow. If I have a flight to catch at 8 a.m. tomorrow involving two airports, I won't be able to really fall asleep until I know that I have done something memorable and tactile that will cause electrons to go into the device. My Nexus 5X doesn't have wireless charging, because when I had my Samsung, Nexus 5, I really enjoyed, you just have this cheap little $10 pad anywhere that you happen to leave your phone. Like there was one on my desk, there was one on the sofa, there was one on my nightstand, and you just sort of just drop it there anywhere. And then when you see the light change from green to blue or whatever, you know that, okay, that's all I needed to do. And you don't realize how inconvenient it is to fish around for a charging plug and plug it into the bottom of something until you suddenly don't have to do that anymore and the phone winds up charged. Yeah. So there's actually a feature, I think, to saying, it doesn't have to be this big console, but there's going to be something with an X or a circle on it that, as long as you can get it, like Canadian curling, as long as you get it somewhere in that circle, you will get points for having charged the phone.
I've had that problem though. Like, I don't know if you've had this, but like with the inductive chargers, I think it was my Palm Pre, I knocked it with my blanket one night and it went off enough that it didn't charge and the phone didn't work. And twice this week, I didn't perfectly put my Apple Watch on the inductive charger and I woke up and it hadn't charged. And when I'm really like, and that has no plug, so I have to be really sure about that if I have to go to an airplane. But I still plug anything that I really depend on in now because I want to know that it's going to work.
I think that's really more a failing of the design of wireless chargers, frankly, if you're slop like that, I don't think that's a well-designed charger. I use a little charger.
The little Macintosh is what you need to use.
Exactly. I had that problem with my first charger, and then I bought one that was only a little bit more, where such a brilliant, simple, elegant solution. It was a pad that was larger than the size of the phone, but it actually had like two, three, or like four separate charging pads on it. So if you got it anywhere on the charging pad, it would be close enough to something to charge up your phone.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't need a new standard. You just need to say, what if we increase the cost by 38 cents and actually put multiple charging pads on this?
I use a little easel charger, and once the phone is in that easel, it's going to charge. You could knock it out of it, I guess. But, I mean, once it's in there, it's going to charge. And this is the Tilt, T-Y-L-T. But I feel like that's, I don't know. It's just, that's a design issue. That's not a fault with wireless charging.
Also, Renee being really tired when he slopped everything down on top of it issue.
And I also have to point out that
Renee, we're all adults. Go ahead and use the phrase energetic lovemaking. It's fine. It's a point of pride in some cultures.
You turn the watch away, so it doesn't have to see that. And then
well, the last thing I want to know is what time it is. I don't want to have to. We actually took all the clocks out of the bedroom because that you don't want to get distracted by, oh, I'm late for work. A little TMI,
or
I think so.
How much is this going to cost me?
Yeah.
Why didn't the numbers change?
That is, by the way, okay. As long as we're going there, that is another issue. Apple control. Apple decides what's politically correct in the App Store, what's adult and not adult in the App Store. I mean, it's kind of a nanny about the content, and they're really
the Walmart of the App Store.
Yeah, you really can't make an argument that that's for consumer. I don't know what that's for. That's Steve Jobs' own bias carried on, I guess.
Again, that's a business decision. They believe that if they make the environment fairly safe, that it'll encourage parents and children and everybody to use it. And if there were stuff in there that was not appropriate, that they would have much more issues with trust. With people feeling safe.
It's less the adult content to me than the political content. You know, they're deciding what politics are okay and what aren't. I don't think
it's hard.
Absolutely, they're right. I don't deny that.
They flip flop a lot on those because that is really hard to.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, because we forget that apps are a form of communication, after all. That you can have an app that if you can have someone who is creatively trying to spread the word or trying to solve a social issue by releasing an app that keeps you informed about headlines about here's what's going on in this part of the country, or here's what this regime is responsible for right now. There are people who would like to create, for instance, a watch face that here is how many civilians have been killed by this regime as of 8 o'clock this morning. I mean, not a depressing thing when you're trying to figure out if to make the train, but that this is the sort of thing that gets people's minds focused on a problem. And if you are saying that we will not allow political commentary of any kind, I think that Apple absolutely has the right to do that, just like any store has the right not to carry Mein Kampf if they feel like they don't want to have Mein Kampf in the store. It is an itchy problem that maybe there's no real solution to, but it's something that everyone has to be aware of at least.
Yeah. This is the wireless charger that I use.
Nice. Oh, yeah, I have that one.
It's nice to have that by your bedside and you just put the phone. I'm actually more and more.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, I have the Apple little dock, but you've got to, you know, you've got to get the lightning right on there. And yeah.
The other great thing about those wireless chargers is that while I was using that phone, I never didn't know where my phone was in the morning.
Yeah,
It had to be right there. I forgot. I connected it to this thing last night, or I kept it. Yeah,
it's the View VU from
Free was such a Riverstone that I would just put it on the. I forget what they called.
Remember that? But that was weird. And for some reason, in the early days of Qi, a lot of these chargers were almost designed to slip off of, you know, these devices. There was one that Windows Phone had that was a pillow. Nokia made a pillow. Remember?
That was great. And the Nexus 4 would slip off of a giant table if you put it in the middle of the table on a flat surface.
Crazy. Anyway, the funny thing is Google's eliminated wireless charging too, so maybe it's a bad idea. I don't know.
It was
inefficient. But I mean, we're not talking. I mean, and a light bulb's inefficient too. I mean, we're not talking a huge amount of inefficiency, I don't think.
Which is why, again, I'm so curious about if, like, Apple, and I've heard apparently they are going to be doing this really wireless charging, and I don't know what that
I am so like skeptical. I am so skeptical. I just find that the health issues alone.
Is it going to cook you as you walk by? Are you going to microwave?
Power is the inverse square. To get power 3 feet away from something requires so much power coming out of that thing. That I find it impossible to believe that that's not dangerous, a health hazard.
Yeah. All I can say is that the last time I even in a cursory way asked engineers about this, they said that there are some ideas, but none of them are practical.
Right.
I mean,
ultrasound and.
Yeah, I mean, you can, again, if you want to win a bar bet, or if you want to prove a technology works, right, you can make it happen. The best they could say is that they could commercially, technology could create sort of a virtual charging station where so long as you put it on the table and it's sort of near this little pod that you've also put on the table, it will charge. And even then, they said that they'd be really, really concerned. The one engineer I talked to said that he feels as though most of his time would be spent making the FCC happy about this device.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he was a golden expert on wireless charging technology. And this was like 2 or 3 years ago. So there's always room for breakthroughs. But
yeah.
When Apple releases true wireless be anywhere in the room charging, I will learn something I did not know before about how it is possible to charge a battery. That's not a bad thing.
And you want to talk inefficiency. I mean, that's got to be massively inefficient.
Why can't we just get inductive pockets? I mean, wouldn't that work?
Why is the cat walking sideways, honey? Honey?
Is it a credible rumor? I mean, or
yeah.
It really is, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we'll find out in September.
What the rumor, how much has been distorted over what they're actually doing, it's hard to say, but.
Yeah. All I know is when you climb Sutro Tower, the big radio tower in San Francisco, you have to wear a metal mesh bunny suit to go up there. I did it before that regulation, and I had RF burns.
Did it before it was cool.
On my hand, little white spots on my hand. I asked the chief engineer, what are those? He said, oh, that's just RF burns. Nothing to worry about. Okay.
Well, you still have the hand, Leo. So
you know, the cancer hasn't set in yet. So.
No.
And that was
did you
like
want to have children, Mr. Laporte?
And I had children. Now, admittedly, they both came out a little whopper jawed. Maybe that was could have been the Sutro Tower. Who knows? I'm just joking.
Sure, cookies would levitate out of the cookie jar, but that could be anything.
Leo gets RF burned today, years ago, then today his son jumps off a building. I mean, it just
It really could be connected, couldn't it? Dad, I wouldn't have done that if you hadn't climbed Sutro Tower back in 1985.
I don't want to say anything negative about. I'm just asking a question. Did this happen before or after that viral video of that person who had a YouTube channel about him jumping off of tall buildings and landing inside hotel pools until the time he totally didn't? And
that's the thing I dread. You know, one successful thing, and now it's going to be we got to up the ante. I got to really somehow quash this.
You convince him that jumping off things isn't cool. Flying from the ground up is cool.
Oh yeah, getting like from the ground.
Take off. Yeah, take just off, keep practicing your takeoff.
Don't use gravity. That's a cheat.
Yeah. Yes.
You got to fight gravity.
Yes. Superman jumps up. He doesn't jump off.
I admit I did try in Apple Messages. I was very disappointed to find animated GIFs of horrific injuries from falling, but I couldn't find any. I'm not kidding. This morning I was searching, couldn't find any. Thank you, Apple. You see, this is why they got to open it up. Our show today brought to you by a brand new sponsor. Want to welcome Jamf to Mac Break Weekly. I think some of you already know Jamf. If you are managing devices, managing mobile devices, Jamf's mobile device management software empowers IT to provide the experience, the user-friendly experience your employees want and expect and deserve. If you've got a enterprise with a bunch of Apple devices, and God knows you probably do these days, you can automate device management, drive productivity with Jamf Pro. Now, you may remember it under the name Casper Suite. Now, JAMF, it's the IT tool you need to quickly deploy devices, manage daily updates, accurately inventory device hardware and software, and secure devices through patching and automated restrictions. Jamf Pro's self-service feature allows users to do the same. They can install apps, update software, and maintain the status of their device. If you let them, but it's not, you know, it makes them feel good without IT assistance. From its world-class support to its professional services and training courses, Jamf has everything organizations need to ensure their Apple implementation is a long-lasting success. Jamf Now. They've renamed this the variety of tools, so I'll fill you in. This is Bushel. Remember Bushel? Jamf Now is a cloud-based management solution that's simple, accessible, more affordable. Small businesses can afford it, which allows you to support your users without IT help. It's everything a small business using an Apple device or devices needs. And nothing more, no training, no documentation required. It just does it. Jamf Now can remotely configure device settings. I wish we had that, because when we move to the new building, we have all these people who or needed to have Wi-Fi calling turned on their phones. And I had to go from person to person and turn on Wi-Fi calling. I would have loved this. Oh, yeah, let's just turn it on. Distribute apps, manage app licenses, enforce security measures like passcodes and lost mode. Oh, man. Don't you hate it when your users say, I lost my phone? Well, you have Find My iPhone turned on, right? No. Whether you have 10 devices or 10,000 devices, Jamf helps you empower your end users to be more productive all the way, making your life easier. They should make a version for like families. Wait a minute, they do. Jamf Now, the first three devices are free. Additional devices, $2 a month. Go to Jamf, JAMF.com/MacBreak to discover how Jamf makes life easier for IT and users. Request a trial of the robust Jamf Pro solution, or get started right away with a free Jamf Now account. Free for three. You know, I'm going to use this because I manage like five iPhones. not just mine, but like the family's iPhones, the extended family's iPhones. I'm an IT, managing an IT department here. JAMF.com/MacBreak. We thank Jamf for their support of MacBreak Weekly. I didn't even think of that. Thank you, Jamf. We're talking Apple. We're talking Mac. We're talking all sorts of stuff with Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Consumer Reports backs down. Now, you know, the funny thing is people, I actually heard, I saw tweets or whatever that said, oh, Apple paid them off. Come on.
I gave him a sandwich. Gave him a turkey sandwich.
Come on.
Oh, people are adorable. People I love humanity. I hope we let you live another 800 years at the very least. That's adorable.
Well, I mean, it would explain the 18.5 hour battery result. Because I want that MacBook Pro.
Yeah, but that's right. So we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
We said there was a red flag when Consumer Reports said we are not going to recommend the MacBook Pro for battery life, because in that recommendation they said, but weirdly enough, we got great battery life when we used Chrome. It just was with Safari. Wasn't that weird? And and even when we used Safari, sometimes it was really good, sometimes it was really bad. Wasn't that weird? But this is our recommendation anyway. And I think your point, Renee, was well taken. That but this was just like rush, get those clicks, get those links. Now, of course, we saw Apple's response. Hey, Johnny, we saw Apple's Elvis is in the building. We saw Apple's response. They said, well, they were doing it wrong. Consumer Reports test used Safari. They said, and rightly so, we're only going to use the browser that comes with the computer. We're not going to download a third-party browser, so we're going to test it with Safari. But what we want our test to do is, on Wi-Fi, load pages, and download each time all the cache, all the stuff. So we're going to turn off the cache. That's in the developer options. Discovered a little-known bug, which Apple said, oh, that's a bug. And Apple patched the bug a few days, not so long ago.
Bug was actually patched before Consumer Reports found it, but it was only released afterwards.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. You don't patch a bug if you don't release it, okay?
No. So I just mean like that was in the pipeline to be patched.
Okay,
yeah. It was coming in the update. Yeah.
So it was they were able to quickly push it out, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Consumer Reports tests again, and now it's better. It's all okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's not. So it was a bunch of sarcastic tweets saying, "Well, my battery life is terrible," and that was the whole problem with this, is that Consumer Reports tests are completely separate from there being battery life issues. And unless you know the tests are good, it's really hard to comment on the battery life issues. So the most important thing to me was square away those tests, then we can have a whole conversation about the battery life.
Well, and that's, I think I've said this a couple of times. I still get weirdly inconsistent battery life. So what I'm doing now, I should tell you, on this show, I started with 98% battery. I'm only using Safari. I have some other stuff running in the background, normal stuff. Let's see if it gets me through the show. The last time I did this, it did not. It got 2 hours exactly. Where am I right now? I am at 78.
I've been using mine since launch, and I get about 6 hours like consistently on it.
It just varies, because I do have a bunch of background processes and syncing things and stuff, so I don't know. You know, that's the problem.
The only thing I found that really that really hurts me is Google Docs now, because I don't have Chrome. I deliberately didn't put Chrome on it because I want to suffer. I wanted to see whatever was happening with Consumer Reports initially, but I realized the other day the computer almost completely froze and was just draining. I had like 9 different windows open with 3 or 4 different Google Docs tabs in every window, and those were all just chewing away. So like, it really does depend on what. It's not just the browser now. The browsers are super powerful. It's what you're doing with the browsers.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's pretty clear everybody's battery life is going to be very your mileage.
Steve Jobs was like, New York Times, I'm going to test a website. Let's go to the New York Times site. Yeah. But we do way more things with websites now than visit the New York Times.
What's weird, though, is Apple got really good battery. I mean, the consumers got really good battery life. They averaged, so they tested the 13-inch model with the touch bar and without, and the 15-inch model with the touch bar. The new battery life results are 15.75 hours, 18.75 hours, and 17.25 hours.
Never seen that.
That's insane battery life.
That's a red flag results. Yeah.
More red flags. Well, and somebody on Twitter said, I think it was, I can't remember who said it on Twitter, but it was Mike Elgin. When have we ever tested trusted Consumer Reports technology reviews?
Yes.
They've never been very good. I trust them for refrigerators and cars.
They're really good at things that are easily quantifiable, but like anything that you can put on a form on a clipboard with somebody who is wearing proper lab attire, they're great at it, or at least they're reliable at it. But it really, that's almost it's by no means as important a set of metrics as it was back when they were testing IBM, the IBM PC XT. It's no longer what CPU is in there, what's the clock speed of the CPU, how much RAM or RAM is in it, or how much storage. It really is. Yeah, I mean, I'm doing when I've had to totally change the way that I write camera reviews, because there is, it's really now more about sort of, you know, umami sort of features, where how do you feel while you're using it? Do you feel like you're using the features? Do you feel like you're getting the pictures that you were seeing in front of you, or the pictures that you were hoping you could get with it? You know, it's a other, you can certainly do the old fashioned, like 2005 style reviews where, okay, and here is the picture from the Apple iPhone at full resolution, and here's a picture from the Samsung phone at full resolution, and I'm going to magnify it so you can see that there's more noise on this one as opposed to that one. Again, that's quantifiable stuff, but it doesn't tell the story of what it is. What's it like to use each of these cameras? There are cameras that can take technically better photos than the iPhone, but there is no camera phone better than the iPhone nonetheless.
All right.
Yeah, check,
there's nothing.
Check multiple sources. Check Comantech. Check Ars Technica. Check, you know, the Twit Network. See what a lot of people have to say.
And I would also say that you can't really, that the only thing you could do is to if you have an older MacBook and you know what it was supposed to get, then you can compare it to the new MacBook and what it's supposed to get, and maybe not just Apple's numbers, but number. You know, look at Anand's results for the old one and the new one, and you will get relatively. You know, because I never get anything, any of those numbers, certainly not 17 hours.
And like Andy keeps saying, you can take it back. If it doesn't work for you, you can take it back.
Like, how long do you have to do that?
I think it's 14 days in most places.
Yeah, it's too late for me. I own it.
Well, one of the things that we like to do is, like, we do the 1 month later, the 2 months later, the 6 months later, because there's a lot of stuff that either changes over time or you learn better about. Like, I'm going to do my MacBook Pro 2 months later, I think, this week. And, you know, there's a lot of things I love about the machine. I don't use a touch bar anywhere nearly as much as I thought I would, but I use Touch ID continuously and I love it. So like, there's these things that after you've used it for a while, the initial impressions, both good or bad, sort of stabilize.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is why I have to keep this. I can't say, 2 weeks and bring it back. I gotta, you know, plus good I got the custom one with the rainbow Apple. So I don't think they'll take it back. Somebody brought me some old rainbow stickers.
Sexy.
Oh, I love those. I agree with you, by the way. I love Touch ID. And I have yet to find a good use for the touch bar. But the funniest thing now is I keep editing out features of the touch bar. You can't turn it off, can you?
No, I mean, like, you can do a lot to disable, but it's really weird. Like, I didn't think I'd notice this, but instead of hitting escape now, when I have a full screen video, I look down and there's that little, shrink button, and it just makes sense because I'm used to seeing that on the screen, and I get a smile every time and I hit it. I don't need it. The escape button would be fine, but just having that key actually relate to what it means was enjoyable.
Right. I've actually now kind of taken enough out that this moved this over, because every time I hit the delete key, I would hit the touch bar and
Siri would come on.
I moved everything over.
That doesn't. Yeah. it put a smile on my face like the first time I was using it. But then you get into things where I know where the escape key is. I don't have to look to see what is this button and what is it telling me this button is for. I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag. I think it has to prove itself for the next year. It's a little bit like 3D touch, where I hope that developers support it in such a way to make it essential, important, and delightful to all users. But that's not going to happen until developers really figure out the best way to implement Touch Bar in their apps.
Well, and I have to admit, Force Touch, what do they call it on the Mac? Is it Force Touch or 3D Touch?
Yeah. Force Touch.
Force Touch on the Mac is still driving me crazy, because I can't,
I don't use it.
Well, I could disable it, couldn't
I? I just don't use it.
Yeah,
I should just disable it. I use it for previewing. I gotten used to using it. Like, I'll press deep to preview a window before I go.
My problem is I'm trying to drag an icon and I'm accidentally pressed deep and no, now it doesn't do what I think it's going to do and it's driving me nuts. So I should just disable that.
The thing that I think is really interesting, we talked about this a bit before the show, is that the Taptic Engine on iPhone, I forget it's there sometimes, and then I bring up like the accent characters in the keyboard, and I can actually feel the keys, or I can feel those little tumblers. And the Nintendo demo with the Switch, where they showed that you're holding the Joy-Con, I think it's called the Joy-Con, and you can feel marbles spinning around in it enough that you can count how many marbles, or you can count how many ice cubes are inside it.
So one guy said that. I really want to.
Well, they did that in the demo, and then they had a couple guys who went back and tried to use it and said, like, there's a mini game, one of the new mini games, I think it's called 1-2 Go or something, is to count the marbles, and you have to guess how many marbles are in it, and they were able to do it accurately. And I don't know what sort of witchcraft is going on, and I can't wait till I fix it if somebody tears it down.
Yeah.
But we've been spending so much time with physical interfaces, with pixels on the screen, and now voice interfaces, all the sex rage. You know, it's like Alexa and Siri and Cortana, all those things. But tactile interfaces are hugely interesting when you start to feel about, like, think about a touch bar that's completely tactile, that has simulated texture. You know, that's 20-year-old technology, but it's taken until the last few years to make it real, and how far they could push that. It starts to get really interesting, not just for accessibility, but just to make these devices, like Andy's point with plugging things in, just feel like objects again. It's super exciting.
Yeah.
There's a not to get off topic, but there was a really good article in Wired with the designers who are developing Google's version of VR, and they're talking about how it's like they have to really develop things that are brand new. They're bringing back skeuomorphism because people, you're in a world in which you're expected that things are real, so they have to be correlate to real world objects, and they have them. So what if a user has to type something? And okay, are you going to bring up like a virtual keyboard, like in Tron or any other, like, you know, or Minority Report, and have virtual hands like lighting things up? And they decided they found out that what people really like is we're going to present people with a huge keyboard, like a xylophone keyboard, and give them two virtual hammers, and you just smash the keys on the things you want to type. And it works. People like using it. It's like, okay, it's silly, but it's like, you're fired. We are shutting down your department.
Can you imagine, though, pouring a drink in VR and feeling like the ice cubes in the drink and the water filling it up?
Haptic feedback is going to be very important in these touch controllers. Absolutely. That's the thing. You know, you're really only getting one sense. You're getting sight.
Well, not just that, but imagine this is that VR and AR just doesn't go far enough. I saw at the I think it was at the someone who's working at the Media Lab, and he was talking to me about, believe it or not, haptic insoles for your shoes. I'm trained enough not to laugh at what seems like a funny idea. But then he was telling me about how, like, for instance, if you're vision impaired, how about that if we put insoles in your shoes that will cue you as to which way you need to go left, or it will see that because of another device that you're wearing, it will see that the crossing light is now good and there's no traffic, and it will just simply sort of give you a pulse from the heels to your toes saying, okay, it's all right to go forward, all the way to just, again, simple navigation for people who do not need assistive devices, where you're just walking, and suddenly it's not like you feel your feet being pulled down this street, but it is unmistakable, if subtle, that no, you're meant to be turning right here. And that doesn't require you to look at the screen, doesn't require you to wear anything on your face. The computer is communicating things that are valuable to you without forcing you to make any adaptations to what you're doing. You're just walking down the street and you're just getting a cue that, oh, by the way, like you're a dog and the technology is a leash, just sort of giving you a tug to the left. You know, it's just, and you're like, wow, that I would like to have haptic insoles on my sneakers.
The new version for DJ Pro on the iPhone, because as a taptic engine, they actually make the beats taptic. So if you want to, you don't have to look down to see what the beat is. You can feel it under your finger as it's going. And they said it's really useful because, you know, you don't want to have to look down all the time.
Yeah, those additional senses are valuable. I experienced that with the Apple Watch when I first used Nav and it said turn here and all that. That was a nice feedback mechanism. Speaking of AR, we had a demo on Saturday on the new screensavers of something new from Occipital that will be available in a couple of months called the Occipital Bridge. You know, if you've been feeling left out on your iPhone because you know, your friends with Samsung phones are using their Gear VRs and your Google phone friends are using their Daydreams, this is an AR device that uses the iPhone 6, 6S, or 7. And actually, it's better. It's the best one I've seen. It's going to be $399. It's not cheap, but because it's more, it's got augmented reality as well as virtual reality. So see, they have a Olloclip style lens that goes over the camera. This is the infrared Z sensor that senses depth. It's also hinged, which is really nice. So without, you know, you can easily open up the hinge on the headset, the visor, to access your phone, which makes it very easy to get into the mode. It also, let's see, it's going to be compatible with the new iPhone simply by replacing that hinged part. So it's, you know, it's got some upgradability there. But the thing I loved, and we got a great demo, is at first it's augmented reality. So it's using the camera so you can see the room and it can place things in the room. And then we had my co-host, Nathan Olivares-Giles, who was on the new screensavers, he said, tap the brick wall over here. He tapped it. A hole opened up, and there was a bookstore in there, and he could put his head in it, and now he can move into a virtual world as well. So it was a mixed reality device. It
How was the screen resolution, Leo? Because the iPhone's not great for screen density.
I know. Well, if you're using a 7, isn't it 1080p?
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of
our quad HD. I understand.
Android is going, yeah, to 2.5K. But you can,
this pixel is 1080p, and Daydream works fine with it. I think it's okay. I don't know. You know, I didn't try it on. I should have asked. There's probably a screen door effect, but I've yet to see. I mean, all of them do because you're so close.
Yeah, none of them
are.
I want your Retina VR is going to be amazing.
Yeah, we're way far away from that at this point. But it also shows how much power is in the iPhone 7 because it was doing a better job than Microsoft's HoloLens, full field of view, and all of that stuff. And the HoloLens has a Windows 10 PC built into it.
That A10 chip is no joke.
It's really amazing. So, this looks like, I mean, it's expensive, but all of these systems are expensive. They have a developer edition for $499 and the Bridge edition, which is just for end users, will be available in March, they say, for $399. Now, Occipital, the company's doing this, is a well, I mean, these are the guys who did Red Laser. They've been around for a long time. They're not, you know, I was really impressed by their CEO and what they're up to. Speaking of battery life, according to Apple Insider, the fourth beta, you've probably seen this also, Renee, of macOS Sierra 10.12.3 adds brightness to the using significant energy dropdown.
They've done it on iOS for a while. It's about time.
Yeah. You know, and that reminded me that in order to get better battery life on this, I was running this pretty hot. I was running this almost all the way up, which I prefer, you know, like 80% battery. And now if I turn it down, it's a little dimmer, but I'm sure I'm going to get better at battery life. Yeah, it's much better. About an hour in? Okay. 71%. So I will easily get through this.
Any device will spend power by radiating. So that is screen brightness, that is radios, that is, yeah, the heat expunged from the CPU. Anytime you can minimize any of those things, you greatly increase your power.
You will get a pop-up warning if your display brightness is above 75%. You know, saying you might want to turn that down if you want to get better battery life. Yeah. Don't the tests usually go to 50%? Every test I've seen, you run it at 50%, right?
They'll tell you. Usually it's 50%. So I think somewhere 70%.
Okay.
I kind of shy away from trying to give numbers like that. I try to be more general in saying that when I was conserving energy, it lasted for an entire 8-hour workday plus into the next morning. While I was being an idiot with power, it only lasted 6 hours. But I remind you, I was being an idiot with power. It's so hard unless you document seriously everything that you were doing. Here's what the CPU settings were like. Here are the apps that I were using. Mm-hmm. Here's the amount of time that the CPU was being basically clocked at as fast it was going to go. Here's how the screen brightness was. It's really, really hard to get that done. I think that really the best that you can do is to take the claim that Apple has made and then ask yourself, is this a legitimate claim or is it not? And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Apple apparently with its battery testing runs 75%.
Yeah, display. I just saw that.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah.
12 clicks from the bottom.
Yeah, because it doesn't give you a percentage, so it's important to know. 12 clicks from the bottom, huh? Let me run it that way. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's usable, actually. I'll run it that brightness. That's decent.
Again, like they changed their battery tests a couple of years ago and they made them much more accurate, but I still maintain that what we're doing with computers now is like, again, with Pokemon, with Snapchat, with Facebook, hitting batteries harder than they were back then.
I have stuff. I mean, my app pick is running in the background. It's indexing everything I do now. You know, it's kind of like another spotlight. I've got BitTorrent Sync running. I've got Cloud Station from Synology running. You know, all this stuff's running in the background. That's got to, you know, who knows what that's doing. Although I know when I go to my battery life, it says no apps using significant energy. That's useful, isn't it? This little menu drop down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Informed is empowered.
Like, yeah.
when they were initially testing this, like the rumor I heard is that they showed it to like Adobe and Microsoft and a bunch of people. And they're like, ah, oh, very funny, guys. There's no way you're going to ship it. And they're like, no, we're shipping this. And we're, you know, we're going to hold ourselves accountable too.
Why would they be, would they say that?
Because they no one wants to be battery shamed. No one wants.
Oh, like, it's battery shaming. Oh,
yeah, that was sort of like the nickname. Like if Photoshop is using up 90% of your resources, and you can blame Photoshop, you're not blaming Apple. You know, or Safari, you are blaming Apple. It just gives you more information, and some software vendors were not really excited about that process.
Safari is now using significant energy, I guess, because I loaded another page.
Yeah, and it'll spike.
Yeah,
yeah.
I really think, you know, I still think that the biggest improvement you can make to any web browser is somewhere in preferences, say you you can say, I want to limit the number of open windows to X. I want to limit the number of open tabs per window to X. And I want to limit the number of open tabs in any circumstance with all windows to X. And because so many times, this is so much of my of the end of my workday is involved in going through every window I've opened in Chrome, every tab in every window, and bookmarking the ones that involve something that I need to come back to tomorrow and closing the ones that I don't need anymore. And so many times it's like, oh, great, I've got like 18 instances of the same Google app, or I've got 4 instances of the WordPress web app. It's like, even if the app just simply said, oh, well, I noticed that you're trying to open Flickr.com. You do realize you already have a tab open on Flickr.com. Would you like me to instead take you to that existing tab? It's like, because it's so easy to get yourself in the weeds with all these windows and tabs. Yeah. And as we all know, it's like you're lucky if it only kills your battery life. It's just like, oh, I think I'll restart right now for no apparent reason, because you're really, really making me feel a lot of pain now. And I'd like to make you, Andy, feel a little bit of pain in return.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Apple sets its sights on Hollywood. Plans for original content. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you've ever bought a house, you know what a pain in the butt the mortgage process can be. Actually, I was saying hi to Johnny. He's our realtor. And when we bought the house 3 years ago, it was a nightmare. It went on for like months. I don't know why. A part of that is because I think after the housing collapse, there were all these regulations or something, or lenders had gotten very careful. And anyway, we had to submit all sorts of paperwork. We thought we had, you know, plenty of time. We were going to want to go on a vacation in 3 weeks. We thought, oh, that'll be plenty of time. 4, 5, 6 weeks later, we're on a cruise ship trying to submit stuff. It was nuts. If only Rocket Mortgage had existed 4 years ago. Rocket Mortgage is a creation of Quicken Loans, which is easily the most respected lender in the United States for mortgage and refi. They are good. You can trust them, and they've designed a completely transparent online process that geeks will love. First of all, because it's completely online, so you can even submit pay stubs and bank statements just with a tap of a button. And because it's online, it's fast. Okay. And it's completely transparent. You even get little sliders so you can adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time, see exactly how that changes your payment, find the solution that fits your needs. And then within minutes, you're going to get approval, and it's going to be something exactly right for you. Transparent, trustworthy. It's Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Do yourself a favor. You may not be in the market today, but make a note of that, because, boy, that's a big improvement. This story comes from the Wall Street Journal, which makes me think it's actually a leak from Apple. What's happened to my computer? Oh, it went to sleep to save battery. Apple sets its sights on Hollywood with plans for original content. Who was it? I think it was Greg Farrell from the Packet Pushers Net who said, yeah, Apple pushed this story out to put pressure in their negotiations with Hollywood to provide content for iTunes and maybe even this TV app that they're negotiating.
Wall Street, it's Eddie. Teddy, I got a story for you.
I got a story. Hey, Jimmy Iovine here. I think also you could make the case that Apple's looking at Netflix and Amazon. And if you are having trouble getting content, Netflix, I mean, the suffering Netflix streaming was going through because the movie company said, you can't have our stuff. It's got to be on DVD. And the customers.
About a Netflix tax in Canada now. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Oh, it's awful. So Netflix, brilliant. They said, well, screw that. We're going to make our own stuff. They went out. They got House of Cards, gave Kevin Spacey's production company $100 million for a whole season. And it worked really well. They immediately monetized it with new subscribers. Amazon has a brilliant model where they make pilots for like a bunch of series. And then they have pilot week. And they watch how many pilots are, you know, you get to choose what gets made. And The Man in the High Castle, for instance, they did the pilot. And then I guess a lot of people loved it and they made it. Both services are, you know, knocking it out of the park. They're winning Golden Globes and Emmy Awards. I mean, really, Amazon's transparent. It's fantastic. I enjoyed Goliath. They're pushing it hard. They also have the marketing engines. Why wouldn't Apple do this? Apple's got the money. $100 million, that's chicken feed.
My understanding is that it really is what they... Sorry, Andy, go ahead.
No, why don't you go ahead.
Okay, so my understanding is that it's really what they say it is, in that Apple needs to drive subscriptions to Apple Music. And in order to do that, they have to have content that's compelling enough to make people want to sign up. And music is absolutely, like, music exclusives, as much as some people in the industry hate that, are a powerful tool to driving subscriptions. But so is original content. And original content in music is sort of what they're doing with Beats 1, but there's this whole other vector, which is original video content, which is things like Carpool Karaoke and Dre's upcoming show. But we've proven with Netflix, Netflix and Amazon have proven that there's much bigger ways of driving engagement than just using audio. So Apple's sort of experimenting with the video thing. And I think it's precisely what they mentioned. It's like they want to get more people subscribed to Apple Music. Whether they become a full-fledged Netflix or Amazon competitor, this is like just dipping their toe in the water and testing it and seeing how many people they can get to subscribe with a minimal amount of really good programming. They might expand that if it works out really, really well, or they might decide that it's good to have a few real tentpole things that they vary, you know, at different times in the year.
This but again, is the thing
that is an experiment.
That confused me, though. Why Apple Music and not iTunes?
Apple Music is their future. Yep. It's their subscription service. Right.
Exactly. So if you subscribe
Apple Music is give us money every single month, no matter what. Right. iTunes is that if you'd like, here's some things you can buy on demand at your leisure. No pressure, at your leisure. We're not even going to push ads to you. We're just going to say, here's Keisha's latest album. There it is.
So it will end up being more like Amazon Prime, where you get music, movies. You get a bunch of different stuff with Amazon Prime, including with two-day shipping. But it's named Apple Music, which I think that's a little bit of a problem because it's not going to be music, right? Or is it always going to be musically inclined?
Well, it's like iTunes was never a real problem, even though it had videos.
I guess it's not.
This is sort of worse.
This is one of those areas where I have to be honest and say that all I can say is that I don't understand why Apple would want to get into original content beyond simply saying, here are some entertainers that we would like to make very happy. And so we really don't want to see a musical adaptation of A Tale of Two Cities done in swing time with all 3D animation. But we do want this person's next album, and this is something that they really want to do. We want that to be an exclusive. I really don't understand how they could really compete against Hulu and Netflix, two organizations that are doing nothing but building content libraries, doing nothing but pushing a video service where, yes, Netflix has original series, but it also has every season of Cheers. It also has every season of Frasier. It has every season of NBC sitcoms. It's has every most documentaries that never got into – you heard about but never got into a theater until January 1st. They also had almost every episode of Columbo in HD. Those jerks pulled it on January 1st. But that's what I'm talking about. It's like for a small amount of money a month.
That's the people who own the rights to Columbo, obviously.
Right. I know. Yeah.
Not Netflix or Amazon. I mean, that's the...
No, Netflix decided they hated Columbo.
That's the problem that Netflix has.
That's like not being able to buy a copy of the national anthem. It's just not right in America. It's just not right. But that's the sort of stuff I'm talking about. It's like... you're talking about Amazon, and... Amazon is not asking you to give them X dollars a month for the video services. They're saying that here is everything we're going to give you if you give us this one-time payment of what's it, $90 a year, it's like you will get immense amount of music that you can download. You will get an immense amount of video that you can watch and download for free, including original series. We will also give you free shipping. We will also give you access to books you don't have to pay for. And it's like, it's, you're giving people like, you're giving, you, they won't be able to get to provide the absolute one reason for everybody to sign up, but they can give everybody at least two or three reasons that work for them that will add up to $90 a year. So like I said, I'm not saying that it'd be stupid for Apple to do it. I'm saying that I don't understand where the upside is for them, apart from we were all being really inspired by Richard Feynman. Here is an unproduced script about Richard Feynman's life that Alan Alda's been trying to do. We would love to be the people who actually help produce Alan Alda's biography of Richard Feynman. And if it becomes an Apple exclusive, even better. And or, hey, we would really want this performer's next album. This performer wants to star in a tap dance version of The Great Gatsby. Okay. if that's what it takes to have this great relationship with this performer, we will do that.
By the way, you made that up out of whole cloth, right? There is no Alan Alda Richard Feynman script, or is there? Because I would love to watch that.
There is an Alan Alda one-man show where he performs as Richard Feynman.
He's a perfect person to do that.
Would have
So far what Apple has done is music-focused, so it kind of makes sense. Planet of the Apps is coming. Yeah. I guess that's not karaoke. Music. Carpool Karaoke, they licensed that. They're doing a Dr. Dre show. So those kind of make sense.
But it's very different. It's not like, again, like they don't want to just start competing with Netflix. And you can make, some people said they should just buy Netflix. But that, what they really want to do is they're providing you with music. But this gets a lot of attention. When they do something like Planet of the Apps or they do Carpool Karaoke, it gets a lot of attention. And then people are like, oh, I want to check that out. Oh, if I watch this, I get all this music. They're just driving subscriptions and driving attention. It's the same thing as House of Cards. This is amazing. I got House of Cards. Oh, look at all this other great stuff I get as well. It just sort of is meant to tip people over whatever little last barrier they have before hitting the subscribe button.
And there's always that last problem where it'll be great to have if you're a Carpool Karaoke fan and you really want this show, that's great. But remember that you're going to have to buy an Apple TV because it's not going to play on anything else. And as you're going to have another, you're going to have another app that that is compatible with Apple Music. So
Apple Music on your Android device.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh Lord.
No, I don't know that, but I mean, I'm just. But also, it's like I'm not going to subscribe anymore. But yeah.
But doesn't Apple
absolutely fair to Apple, that's everyone's doing that. You can't get the Amazon app, the Amazon video app. Can't get the it's Google terrible. Video app. You have to. Right, so that's a problem.
Apple, this now, if they do this, really, this begs them to step back and redo it all. Redo iTunes, redo Apple Music, rebrand it, Apple Media. Just fix everything. Bring 4K to the Apple TV. I know none of this will happen. And it's just going to be continual piecemealing, but it sure would be.
It's so hard. Like if you look at Netflix, I have this beautiful 5K screen that I cannot watch Netflix on because they will not allow Netflix 4K on a computer because they're afraid we're all going to steal their 4K. So I mean, like the whole thing is just so incredibly
broken.
Such
a mess. You know what I'm more and more loving? NVIDIA makes this thing called the Shield, which is an Android TV device. They've just updated. I've had the Shield since it came out last year or 2015, 2 years ago now. And they've just updated that one to the current state, and it now has Amazon on it, it has Netflix on it, it has Google on it. Of course, it doesn't have Apple, but it has NVIDIA streaming games, so you can play like No Man's Land on this little tiny No Man's Sky on this little tiny thing. It's just it was always sitting in my cabinet, and I'm more and more using it. When I got the 4K TV, I started using it because it has 4K. And I actually took the Apple TV out of there because it doesn't have 4K. It has Chromecast. Yeah. This is a really nice little box, and it's not very expensive. It comes with a joystick style game style controller, and then I bought the remote control, which you can plug headphones into. I'm just more and more, HDR 4K, more and more.
It's been my primary living room box. Also, it also has Plex built in, so you can even like use it as a not just as like a Plex client, but as a Plex server. So if you don't want to have like a NAS or a Mac running 24/7, you can just have this the same box that streams you streams Game of Thrones through HBO Go. We'll also host all of your music and all of your videos and make it available to you anywhere across the internet. And yeah, it's the only disadvantage is that it's not difficult to use, but it's not as easy to use as an Apple TV or a Roku. It's a little bit.
Really? I find it better. I find it easier to use.
I think it's better than Apple, the latest version of Apple TV, where you press the home button now and it takes you to what it imagines you want to see next, as opposed to Apple TV. You're adorable,
right?
But I know what app I want to go to, and it's none of them that you're. I'll just have to type.
I prefer the UI. But I should point out, I'm a Comcast customer, and Comcast won't allow me to watch HBO Go on the NVIDIA Shield. I can do it on the Apple TV. Yeah.
It's so broken.
It's such a broken system. But $199, and you can put a little, it supports micro SD cards, so you can add memory even to it. It has a little slot for micro SD cards.
I think they took that off of the new version.
The pro version? Yeah. So I have the old version.
The last year's editions had them. I think that at CES they even unveiled the version 2, which is absolutely identical hardware but in a smaller package, and you get the game controller without having to you get the remote without having to pay extra for it.
I think, if memory serves, they did delete
the SD card slot because they felt that no one was using it. That the same refrain, no one's using it. It's a waste of time.
I'm using it.
But it does have USB, so you can actually hook up like a 1 terabyte hard drive to it, and that's no problem.
And it's a tiny little thing. I mean, just this little flat thing. It's not.
Just little things. Like after, I wish that Apple would understand that NVIDIA, when it turns on, there is this yellow sort of a pointy boomerang, slim pointy yellow, green boomerang that glows up.
Oh yeah, when the light on it. Yeah,
and it's so pretty.
Yeah,
and I like it. It's a dash of color in what is otherwise a very bleak and gray winter for me. As opposed to, we are not even going to make the Apple logo on this. No. We're going to make it a little more glossy, so from the right angles, it will look like it is not completely black.
And what's hilarious is one of the biggest compliments we get is that there's that light on the Apple TV and it annoys people, and they duct tape over it and they just wish Apple would let you turn it off. I'm trying to watch a movie and it's just glowing at me.
You can't win.
It's a power light. It's like,
I would just like.
They're terrified of joy.
But it's time to do a four. It is time to do a 4K Apple TV.
Break into your house and steal your TV and slap you and then take all of your cookies and leave.
Yeah,
you hate Joy so much?
I believe Joy beat you up as a kid. This box can't be upgraded to 4K, but they were testing a bunch of different boxes, and pricing was a concern because those chips, the Apple chips that were powerful enough to do it, were expensive back then. Well, but this is 2 years later now.
The NVIDIA is $200, so I mean, it's a lot more. Yeah,
and you put an A9 in there, and you can keep prices low, and you can go. But to me, I was watching the Nintendo Switch thing, and I would love a version of Apple TV that just ran on an iPad, so I could dock the iPad, watch my TV, pick up the iPad, walk off. And there's still no handoff for anything related to iTunes. There's been handoff since iOS 8, but I can't start watching something on Apple TV, pick up my iPad, walk away, and keep watching it. Like just automatically, I have to go and find it and start it again. And just Apple has all these technologies; they work for everything else, and yet iTunes feels like. I understand they took a couple of years off to get the Beats integration going and to redo Apple Music, but it feels like they really need to start hitting all those technologies because it's a year or two later and they're just not shipping them.
Yeah. Now's the time. Spend a little of that money on creating a unified media entertainment platform that hands
full
off
continuity, full everything.
Yeah. You can do this, Apple. You can do this. I know you can do this.
Take iTunes to the cloud.
Speaking of things Apple could do, did you see? I think this is a terrible idea, but Pascal Eggart has created his concept design for the next Mac Pro. And he even made a website, which looks just like an Apple website. Mac Pro 2.
Does it have aperture?
Uncompromised. No aperture. But they did. What he did is took the cylinder and extended it. So now it's more like a racetrack oval. Which gives you room enough to put a standard video card in it, for instance, or standard SSD hard drives in there, for instance.
It looks like a black Mr. Fusion machine.
It does, doesn't it? You can feed the top.
It looks like Darth Vader's toaster.
But I have to say, just bring me the cheese grater. I don't care what it looks like on the outside, especially once I hang all that stuff off of it. It's going to look like a spider's nest anyway. No pro cares what your their desktop looks like.
One way or another, it's going to have like one of these on top of it, like about 10 minutes after I set it up and start using
it
for real.
Cheese grater.
So who cares?
Yeah, give me the freaking cheese grater.
Give me flat surfaces that I can put Post-it notes on.
There's a rumor that Apple's going to update the MacBook Pro this year to have like the full graphics and RAM, you know, desktop RAM, and it's going to be bigger and it's going to get like 3 hours
battery life. The MacBook Pro. The laptop.
The MacBook Pro. Because, yeah, so right now, like Intel still does not support DDR4 low power in a laptop profile.
So it'll be a desktop replacement.
So it'll use desktop parts instead of laptop parts, which means bigger, less battery life, but it'll make some people happy. But, you know, until they try the battery life. So it's going to be another fun year.
Why don't you make it with a 17-inch screen and really just go all in?
Oh, bring back the battleship.
Do you think that that is an attempt to get rid of the desktops entire? No, because they're still going to make the iMac.
It's a concession. So it's like almost like when they put out the iPod Nano with no buttons, and very quickly they realized that was not a good idea. There's an enormous amount of frustration, at least that's my read on it, that they can't do what they want to do with these machines because, again, like things just get – DisplayPort 1.3 hasn't shipped yet. Never mind DisplayPort 1.4. So it's a lot of magic to make these 5K displays work, and that causes a ton of compromises. And there's no low-power DDR4, which means that they're limited in what they can do in terms of memory if they want to hit their power profile. So there's just – they're feeling like this is – and, you know, maybe one day they'll make their own x86 or they'll make their own ARM chips or something, but – they're hitting real walls with everyone from AMD and to Intel. And I think this is just reality saying we can't have everything that we want. So we're going to have to compromise one way or the other.
Yeah.
Silicon is tough.
It's tough. It's tough. Well, another thing we talked about on Sunday on Twit was the repatriation. Friday, President-elect Trump becomes President Trump. And one of the things he said in campaigning, although he said many things in campaigning, it's unclear which he means and which he doesn't, but it was that he was going to make it easier to get the money, the overseas money that Apple and other companies have, and bring it back to the United States. That could be a $120 billion windfall for Apple, right?
So much money.
So much money.
I mean, it's hundreds of billions of dollars.
It's out there.
20%,
They could spend it in Europe, but he floated the idea of maybe a 10% additional tax on top of it, which would...
It's 30% now, right? If they bring it back
35,
today,
30%, yeah. The corporate the corporate tax rate is high. Slower than a human tax rate, but it's
yeah, but again, like, most high for like $150
Apple.
Billion to bring back.
Apple's something like 27%, their overall tax rate. They file that every quarter. So they would love to get that back.
I can't imagine the new administration not having a carrot and a stick, though. Basically saying that we're not just going to make it more attractive for you to bring that money back home. We are also going to make it way more difficult for you to keep that overseas.
Right.
And I think there'll be a lot of back and forth before they make that work. The American government is fighting something greater than themselves, a technology company that has so much money, they're virtually untouchable.
Well, and they're
has access to their inboxes.
They're a global enterprise now. So it's hard to, I mean, they are headquartered in the U.S., but
if Germany says you have to make your German computers here and Spain says you have to make your Spanish computers here and Nigeria says you have to make your Nigerian computers here, which they're doing with data retention laws, like we saw Apple suffering in Russia because you have to store Russian data here. And then Papua New Guinea says you have to store Papua New Guinea data here. It's an international thing.
Yeah.
And the car industry has a lot of history with this where to avoid it for basic trade acts and embargoes, it's like you have to make a certain car and manufacture a certain car in the United States of America. So they'll do like a version of the Pontiac Volante or something that has different headlights that's assembled in Virginia. And it's really not a car they want to sell. It's a car they're being forced to make because they want to be able to sell all the cars that they make more affordably elsewhere, according to their own math, they can make a more affordably elsewhere. It's really hard. As much as you would like companies to occasionally be told the error of their ways and how things that they're doing are maybe not beneficial for people in general, when you force a company to do something, to make a product in such a way that they don't want to make it, like, again, like forcing was GM to make an electric car in the 1990s, they're going to make it. They're going to comply with that law, but they're going to not do it the way that you want it to. It's not like they're going to – the scales are going to fall from their eyes and say, oh, my God, it turns out that we can train people to do the job of assembler robots in China. And it turns out that we can build tens of millions of these things in 20 days in a factory that's only been spun up for a year and people we've only had been training for 2 months. We didn't know that. Thank God. We're going to move everything over here. It's going to be, no, here's exactly what we have to, we are required to do. We are not going to go one penny over that. And as soon as we're, and we're going to be fighting these regulations all the way. And as soon as we feel as though Congress and or the administration has some wiggle room to say that they got what they want, which is the ability to campaign on, hey, look, we brought 10,000 jobs to Louisiana. Then they can say, well, you got what you want. You can campaign on that. Now we are going to slowly move those people into shipping and give them polo shirts and train them to be Apple geniuses instead. It doesn't it's not a great long-term plan, I think.
So $230 billion or something like that. I don't know what the last count is overseas. They get it back. They take $23 billion off the top. They still have more than $200 billion. What I would like to see Apple do is take a couple billion and do some revamp iTunes and make a Mac Pro and so. But what they probably will do is buy back stock, right? Yeah. And you know, this is the problem: is that money isn't going to go towards jobs in any way. It's going to go to, you know, buying back stock, things like that, a bigger corporate parachute. It's not like Apple doesn't have
it's
enough.
It's
not going to change its allocation.
Look at Brazil and India already. Like, Apple's having to deal with this in several countries.
Yeah.
You know, Brazil was super hard to get into. Now they're doing all sorts of negotiations for India. Like, the U.S. is going to be added to that list.
Right. That's right.
I mean, they're going to invest themselves, and they're also going to be buying more companies. It's not that they're going to invent
They have money now that they could buy companies with, and they're not exactly going out there and spending.
Well, I'm just
accumulating stuff.
It's not as though if Apple repatriate or any we're mentioning Apple, but every company is.
Oh yeah, Microsoft, Google too. Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to be fair, but yeah, if these companies repatriate this money, it's not as though they're going to say we're going to spend $1,000 at movie theaters and small businesses and bookshops and put it back in the economy. Again, they're just going to move their monopoly money around through among U.S. banks and U.S. companies, which in itself benefits the U.S. economy. But it's not as though all these jobs that were going to be overseas are not going to be local.
Yeah, but I guess my point, and that's true too, but I guess my point really is does it change Apple's overall strategy? And I would guess not, because it's not like they're hurting for cash in the U.S.
Yeah.
So I think I don't think it changes the game plan particularly. Maybe it does. I don't know.
I'm not qualified to answer that question, so I won't even guess.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things Apple seems to do with its excess, it's borrowed money in order to buy back shares. So the first thing you do is you pay off those bonds, right? And then you buy more shares back. I think it's more likely it's that kind of thing.
They'll do occasional big investments, like their Beats deal. Like, there'll be occasional ones like that, but they buy small companies from time to time.
$3 billion. You have $200 billion. What are you going to do with that?
Maybe if they spend all their money and get into real trouble, Wall Street will be interested again.
Wouldn't that be funny? I think you could safely say Apple will never again get into trouble. You got enough money now. Just live on the interest, Apple. You know, buy yourself.
Retire to Florida.
Buy a boat.
We're getting into hot tubs. We feel like we've done everything we can with phones. So now we have this beautiful bead blasted ceramic aluminum hot tub.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if they decided to, like, both flex their muscles and make customers happy by saying that if you, oh man, I just hate the keyboard on this new MacBook. Like, okay, damn it. Fine. We spent $8,000 to build one MacBook with thicker keys, and we will sell it to you for the cost of a regular MacBook. You happy now? Fine. There you go. We're taking an $8,000 loss on it, but we got money and we're sick of hearing it. Here you go.
Couple of smaller stories. Actually, I'm glad about this. Chrome 56 adds native support for playing FLAC audio in the browser. And it's really mostly Apple people benefit from this, because FLAC playback has been available on Windows 10 for some time. Native support, Android has it. But Apple and iOS and macOS have not supported this. It's a lossless format. Apple has its own lossless audio format, Apple Lossless.
They barely use anymore.
Yeah, but a lot of us, you know, when I rip music or download music, I download it in FLAC. It's a lossless compression format so that I can either completely recreate bit for bit that CD, or more likely I'm downloading high bit rate music and I want to have it in FLAC because, you know, MP3 why bother?
It's a forward thinking source because it's not, one company's not going to sync it for you.
It's not lossless. So I love it that I could now play back FLAC audio in my browser. I use Vox as my I've kind of given up on iTunes. I use Vox as my playback device on my Mac, and it supports higher bit rates. And Apple, if you set it up properly, will support higher bit rates. Vox is quite good, I think. I like it.
It's amazing because there's people who, like, I'm one of the people who can't listen to music on the computer because it feels like it's blasting in my face. So I'll put an iPhone or I'll use Apple TV. I'll put something around me because for some reason that's less distracting to me than music coming out of the Mac. But if it's coming out of the Mac, I just can't work while it's on.
Yeah.
Weird psychological thing.
You're weird. I know. Most programmers I know are wearing headphones plugged into their computer as they're banging away.
Or if they work at home, they're like, I have it on my Apple TV because if there's a podcast coming in front of me, I can't listen to it.
Actually, I can AirPlay to my stereo behind me in my office. So you're right. I often do that because I like the music coming from there as opposed to coming from here. VOX, it's a nice little cloud. They have their own cloud, the Loop Cloud, and I like it a lot. It streams high-res music. I can't remember what I had to do to make that work. I think I had to go into the MIDI, something like the MIDI settings to make that work.
Well, MIDI, that takes me back.
Yeah, right?
Isn't there to the days of like black SCSI terminators and and a phone jack connector with a resistor connected to it because you wanted to terminate your phone net network.
What did I do?
Oh, nostalgia.
I'm looking in the it's not in the sound setting preferences, or is it? That you can change the native bit rate. Maybe they've taken that out. This is the latest Mac OS. I don't remember how I did that. Oh, well. I have to do some research. Another couple of little tidbit-like stories. YouTube no longer supports 4K video playback in Safari. Is that that copy protection thing you were talking about?
So this is some people suspect that this is Google flexing their codec muscles because they have their own video codec and they don't want to use the same. Like I think Apple's defaulting to H.264. High efficiency video codec, HEVC, is what some people are going to be using, but the licensing fees are heavy. So
I believe that's pronounced HEVC.
What the hook are we talking about? It's H.265. It's just they don't want to call it that. Right. So it's just a mess right now. And it works when you're embedded, but it doesn't work when you're on the YouTube page. And I'm hoping it's just a bug and not an attempt by Google to strong arm their codec into everybody's browser.
I hope you're right. Anything else you want to talk about? Pegatron may be moving some factories to the U.S. Pegatron, along with Foxconn, are Apple's big, you know, manufacturing arms, Chinese manufacturing arms. Pegatron chairman T.H. Tung said, according to the Chinese language Economic Daily News, at his year-end banquet, that its plants in California and Indiana could be expanded to meet the needs of purchasers, a.k.a. Apple. Although others use Pegatron. A lot of people use Pegatron to make stuff. HP and Dell, for instance. I think, you know, it'd be very interesting if suddenly we see a lot of manufacturing jobs come back to the U.S. That would be a good thing. They're mostly assembly, though, right? They're not manufacturing in the sense we understand it. Right?
I mean, again, like you have to have huge amounts of training and trade schools. A lot of countries have incredible infrastructure for trade schools, and they get people educated on building parts for all sorts of things at a very young age. And it's just as prestigious as going to an academic school.
Right.
We don't have that culture in North America.
We should have that
anymore culture.
Absolutely. For crying out loud.
My grandfather was 60 years old and he got a job here instantly because they knew the trade school, the metalwork trade school he'd gone to in Germany, and just couldn't find enough people to do that.
Yes. You know, we have a kid going into high school, and if he wanted to be a machinist and do high, I would say, man, that's a great thing. Don't do that. That's what you love. Go do that. But as
one of my best friends once said, you know, you're going to be in the workforce for 40 or 50 years. That's a long time to do something you hate.
Yes.
Don't go to business school because you think it's a better future. Yes. Go to an auto trade school because you love working on cars, because you might be doing it for 40 or 50 years.
Yeah. Although working on cars is going to change a lot in the next 10 years, I think. In fact, it's already changed a lot, right? It's really working on a computer that's attached to it.
Your industry would have changed in 10 years anyway, no matter what industry you went to.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk our picks of the week in just a bit. I want to show you what I did for my mom. You've heard me talk about Eero, the Wi-Fi mesh solution that really solves all those Wi-Fi nightmares of buffering and dropout. No more dead zones. Mom was a good example. I went back east and did a little tech day for my mother. Got her new MacBook to replace her 5 or 6 year old MacBook. It was really slowed down. I got her a couple of Amazon Dots so she could. And she loves them. But one of the big problems she was saying, and I knew this because we FaceTime once in a while, and actually it's supposed to be once a week. Sorry, Mom, I owe you a call. And she'll go into the living room and. The call drops out. So I knew she was having problems. And then she said, yeah, and I want to go out in my studio. She has a little detached studio out back where she has her looms. She weaves and knits and stuff. But I can't because my iPad doesn't work out there. So I knew what I was going to get her for her birthday. It's this, the Eero. It solves Wi-Fi problems. And, man, I got to tell you, it worked so well. It's my third time setting up an Eero system. I'm getting good at it. It's not hard at all. What happens is you get the first Eero and you take out your old router, plugged in the Eero. That was simple. The Eero has two Ethernet ports on the back, one that goes to the cable modem or the DSL modem and your router, whatever it is you have. And the other one can go to hardwire. I put on my house, I have a 24-port switch that the Eero goes to because I have a lot of hardware. I like to do all my TV stuff hardwired if I can. So the Eero is sitting next to the home entertainment unit, and then I have a switch that the second port goes out to. And then of course, you know, you set it up using the Eero app on your phone, which is brilliant. It's the best way to do this. You know, by the way, since I have Mom's Eero on my app, I can, if she calls and says in Rhode Island, I'm having problems with my Wi-Fi, I can see her system. I can see, here, I'll show you. Can you see? I don't know if you can see this. There it is. Yeah, it's probably too far away. But I can see what her bandwidth is. I can check and let's see how the Office Eero is doing. It's on, it's wired, it's online, it's got the latest firmware. You can see all this stuff. So I put one in her office, put one in the front room, put one in the kitchen, and then put an Eero in her studio. She's got Wi-Fi everywhere. That's what makes the Eero so amazing and so easy to use. Eero recently updated. You notice I have version 2.1. That's the other thing I love about Eero. Automatic transparent firmware updates. They happen all the time. That's good for security. We know routers are, you know, from other companies are less than secure and are often not updated. And if they are, it's up to you to do it. Eero solves that by doing the updates. And the latest update I got, version 2, added True Mesh, the next generation of wireless mesh technology. Increased speed, increased performance, increased reliability. We have it at home. We have a 5 Eero setup. Because you can add more Eeros, but the basic unit, basic setup is you can get an individual Eero or you can get the set of three. I love this. You know, remember I said I set her up with an Amazon Echo. Now you've got three new skills on your Echo. You can ask Echo to find your phone or any device in your house, and it helps because it knows which Eero your device is attached to. So it's, oh yeah, it's in the living room. You can also ask Alexa to turn off your Eero LED light for a pitch black room at bedtime. I do that all the time. Lisa doesn't like any LEDs in the bedroom. We have one in the bedroom. You can, and this we use all the time. The Eero allows you to take every attached device, give it a name, and assign it to a person. So I know all of our 14-year-olds' devices, and they're all in a group, and I can actually tell the Echo, I can say, Echo, pause Michael's internet, and it will turn it off. Michael, time for dinner. Pause his internet, and it turns it off. And oh, somebody said, well, can't he just say, hey, Echo, turn it back on? No, you have to go into the app, which is password protected, to turn it back on. I love it. We have partnered with Eero to give you free overnight shipping because you know you want this, and you know you want it right now. Go to eero.com. At checkout, just select overnight shipping and use the offer code MacBreak, and there will be no charge. believe me, it's time to upgrade. You will, you, if you've been, and I, you know, I really was, we were suffering. I just hear it all the time. The Wi-Fi's down. It's not working. I'd be watching something on Netflix. Stops. This really solves it. Eero is a hero in my house and my mom's too. Eero.com. Don't forget the offer code MacBreak for free overnight shipping. We have these units for the ads. I have a feeling they're going to disappear at some point. Somebody's gonna borrow the. Can I borrow your Eeros? We'll never see him again. I love it. It's so interesting how, and I think this is one of the reasons. And I know it's only rumored that Apple's getting out of the router market, but I think this is one of the reasons when there's a product like this is so Apple-y out there. Apple just is.
Isn't it Apple engineers? I think.
It is. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I mean, they it's clearly influenced by the design, the packaging, the app. Everything is just, if you're an Apple user, you're just going to go, yeah. I know what I'm doing here. I feel very comfortable. Time for our, and that would be really one of my picks of the year. I think it probably was some time ago, but time for our other picks of the week. Let's start with Rene Ritchie, because I've tried this too, and I'm curious what your experience has been with the Little Flocker.
Oh, I'm glad you pronounced that and not me. I wanted to be very careful with it.
That's why I did it.
With saying Little Flocker with
little
an L.
Flocker.
So I was part of, I beta tested this, or at least a pre-release. It's Jonathan Zdarsky's app, and he has been very good about developing it openly and encouraging people to try it out. And I meant to pick it weeks and weeks ago, but he was talking about it again this week because we're moving into an era where privacy, personal privacy, is going to be much more important, because regardless of what country you live in or what administration they have, what their social policies are, what their fiscal policies are, it seems that almost every place doesn't have that high a regard for individual privacy anymore. And that's something that we're going to have to deal with as a society. But until we do, it's nice that there are some technologies we can employ as individuals. And what's really nice about Little Flocker is it gives you a very high level of control over your personal data. Now, I'm not sure if it's exactly a kernel extension, but it does go kernel deep on macOS, and it allows you to have control and alerts and information about a wide variety of things. Like, for example, if it detects any app trying to keylog you, it'll throw up a warning. If it detects any sort of malware or ransomware, anything else trying to infect your system, it'll give you a warning. It's basically it's a way to try to take a little bit of informational control over what is happening with your system. And a lot of us do sort of, like, computers have become easy enough that we don't even think about it anymore. We kind of just let them run. And I know I don't, like, the way when I was on Windows, I monitored every little thing that was happening. Like, just, I would check and see what was using what and where was this and was this malicious. And I had a very high level of alerts because it was back in the early days of Windows and you had to. But over the years, I've gotten complacent, and I really don't know what some of the stuff I download does anymore. Like, I know the function of the program, but I'm not as careful with it anymore. And so I love the idea that if I really wanted to, I could install this and start taking more personal responsibility over my my Mac's data protection and data integrity. And, you know, how far this will go, I don't know. How many people really need it, I don't know. But I think that if you do feel like you might be someone who's targeted by keylogging or targeted by malware or targeted by ransomware, you have the ability to preemptively install this, and it'll give you nothing is ever complete protection, but it'll give you a much higher degree of peace of mind, or at least, again, information than you might have otherwise.
If you're at all paranoid. Now, I installed it when it first came out, and it was a little it's kind of like Little Snitch, where it's a little annoying.
Yes, at first, especially because you've got to, like, you know, give permission to everything.
I guess it's still going to be that way.
Yeah, and you've got to tune it, and you've got to do things. You've got to decide what's important to you and what, like, for example, if an app wants to use your webcam, you have to give it not just implicit permission, but explicit permission to use it, which is, like, you still might want to Mark Zuckerberg tape over the camera because you're super paranoid, and that does not mean they're not out to get you. But it'll let you know, for example, if an app, like, once in a while I'll see my camera on, and I won't know why, and I'll realize it's because I launched FaceTime on my Mac and didn't really think about it, and I forgot to turn it off, but I still have that light looking at me. But in this case, if I download an app and it wants to use my FaceTime camera and I wasn't paying attention, I'll get an extra alert from Little Flocker or my microphone or something. And again, it's if you care enough about your privacy that you're willing to put up with a little bit less convenience.
It is not the same as Little Snitch. Little Snitch is kind of a firewall, outbound firewall.
Yes.
This is more like something's accessing your system files or something's modifying something on your system.
Yeah, it's the very privacy, like, personal privacy focus.
You could use both though, right?
Yeah, I mean, and like, there's all sorts of things. You like, depending if you wanted to monitor network traffic, you might want to use Little Snitch anyway. The Little Snitch, I don't think, at least back when I used it, it didn't tell you about things like webcams or not.
No, this is a separate. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Yeah. They're complementary.
Yeah.
I don't. I
think yes, absolutely.
I think you could use both, and if you really were paranoid, you probably would want to use both.
Yeah, and again, yeah. It's not like there is an element of paranoia to this, but we're also living in times that maybe are a little bit paranoid.
Yeah. And it's really nice. And boy, there's nobody like better than Jonathan Zdarsky when it comes to this kind of stuff.
And if people aren't familiar with him, he developed a lot of the techniques, a lot of the forensics that are currently used in, we didn't talk about this, but Cellebrite, which just got hacked. I mean, a lot of companies took his forensic work and sort of try to make it their own.
Yeah, it's so weird that Cellebrite got hacked. It looks like it wasn't a, I'm not sure how much data was exfiltrated, but.
Yeah, but you know, no data. It just goes, it's one more lesson to show you that no data is.
If the hackers get hacked, you're really screwed.
Yeah.
Little Flocker, it is free to try, but if you want to buy it, and Jonathan's doing an honor system, $15 for personal use, $25 for business use.
Yeah, and he's an ace, absolutely.
Yeah, he deserves support for this. I think this, as I said, I tried it when he first came out with it. It was a little rough still, and it also was hard to get rid of. I'm sure it's more polished at this point.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, like I still can't get rid of the BlackBerry device manager on my Mac, no matter what I try. No, so like, there are some things that go so deep.
It's time to rebuild. If you still got the BlackBerry device.
That one computer I haven't wiped, it's still on there and I can't get
rid of it. The good news is Apple makes it really easy to rebuild the system. And so much easier than other systems. How about your pick of the week, Andy Iannacco?
I actually changed my pick of the week midway through the show because we were talking about how annoying like Apple TV, like LED, like power light is. And there are a lot of that stuff tends to happen on a lot of different devices. I usually, when I have a problem like that, including problems where I want to cover up a camera on a laptop or device so I know it's not working, I usually just take a piece of gaffer tape like this, which is like duct tape only with an undo function, where it's very, very sticky and it's completely oblivious to light. But when you peel it off, as long as it hasn't been on there for like 2 years, it'll peel off cleanly. On Twitter during the show, after listening, the Gardner Von Holt, who's listening to us live, recommended something called Light Dims. And it's actually pretty simple and cool. They're just like sheets of various shaped round and square stickers that you can just put over device lights. So they have black ones, they have silver ones, they have white ones, and again, in all different kinds of sizes. They also have different packs where you still want the light to be there. You just wish it were only half as bright. Well, they have versions of it that will block only half the light or only 75% of the light. And if you have something an unusual application, they will sell you a full sheet of this stuff. I haven't used it myself. Again, I've only heard about it a year and a half ago. And I admit that I'm uncomfortable with recommending something that I can hear the infomercial and or the Shark Tank pitch for this product. But it's like $6 directly from the site or through Amazon in all these different sizes and varieties. That's kind of worth having around again if you need to. If you don't have gaffer tape, or if you don't want to have something that you just spent $500 for with a piece of gaffer tape on it, you want something that looks kind of a little bit more professional. This is kind of interesting. I just ordered a pack myself just to try them out.
And they have complete blackout, but they also have like some that kind of just dim it, so you
exactly.
You can choose what you
one
want.
One that's a 50-80%. One's 100%. You can really choose what you want to do.
Yeah.
And different colors, so it'll blend in. So
Dick DiBartolo recommended these, and if anybody has more LEDs shining in his house, it would be Dickie D. And he recommended these. So he uses them, and he says they work great. So light dims.
I like them. They make me feel as though I've got little friends hiding in the house, little glowing eyed friends hiding in the shadows.
Lisa's, my wife has a really strong aversion to any light or any noise in the bedroom. And I'm used to having like lots of little LEDs everywhere.
Yeah.
So I've sanitized it. And you know what? She's right. I sleep much better without those little blinking lights. So I don't use light dims. I just got everything out of the bedroom.
Also because I've got the other reason why I bought these is that I have like a video box that is like a, so I bought on eBay. It's like a, you know, cheap thing, but it does the job for me. But it has this blue LED that I only notice when I'm trying, when I turn off all the lights in the bedroom because I'm going to bed, and then I see this like blue glow that's actually bright enough to like wash that corner of the bedroom. And so I would kind of like to be able to cover that up. So now, now I'm doing it the professional way, not the way that rank amateurs used to do it.
Black electrician's tape.
This isn't the sort of thing, if you pay a consultant $500 an hour to solve your AV problems, you're hoping he doesn't just come in with a gaffer tape. You're hoping he has a professional product.
Perfectly round little dots.
Like dims.
Exactly. I am torn. I have two picks, one from the good old days and one from the future. So I'll start with the one from the past. From Hackaday, somebody has ported Portal to the Apple II computer. You can actually play one of the greatest games of all time on the very constrained graphics of the Apple II. You know, the way Portal works, if you've not played it, and if you haven't, go out and get Portal. It's just
no load runner, but
I wish. You know what, why isn't there a good load runner out now for the Mac or something? I would play load runner for it. So the idea of Portal is you have a special portal gun. There are two kinds of holes you can open, an exit hole and an entrance hole, and allows you to move around the puzzle maze with your portal gun by opening those holes up. And it's frankly something that I've been using for some time to get around the studio, because frankly, it's very hard to, this is Patrick's portal gun. That is nice. From Aperture Labs.
Yeah, I have a... Wow. If you go to anotgo.com, I got a picture of myself during my trip to DC that I made the header image on my Facebook page and on my blog.
That's so great.
As soon as I saw it, I felt that I know what picture I need to have taken of me. And I know that everyone I know will be sick of seeing it.
So yesterday in Triangulation, we had the legendary Jordan Ritter, who is, of course, I mean, I can go on and on. He's a serial entrepreneur. He was one of the three with Sean Fanning and Sean Park who created Napster. Brilliant programmer, security guy, hacker. And his latest enterprise is called Atlas Recall. And it's funny because I had tried it before. I'd put it on my computer before he came on the show. I didn't know he was part of it. Let me go to his website, which is atlas.co, and show you. This is free right now, Mac only. The idea is it's kind of looking over your shoulder, watching everything you're doing, and making a searchable index of all the things you see, from messaging, from email, from websites, everywhere. It has a plugin for Safari and a plugin for Chrome. So if I do a Google search, let's do a Google search for Andy Anatko, something I do regularly, it will pop up an Atlas search in my recall history for documents associated or with your name in it or somehow associated with it. This is free because it's a beta. It's early days. He wants to, if you watch the interview, he wants to make this a platform that applications can integrate into. There's an Atlas Recall app for iOS. It is not available yet on Windows or Linux, although he's working on that, or Android. But I love the idea. He says it's your data. Everybody else is spying on you. The NSA probably has a database like this. Shouldn't you have a database? It's encrypted in place. It's encrypted in transit. They're very careful to say, you know, we don't do anything with your data, but you should be aware that it was one more place your data lives that could be, I guess, subpoenaed by government sources. So if you're worried about privacy, you might not want to use this. But I really think this is great. Once you've been using it for a while, you know, you could say, oh, what was that thing? We were talking about dimming, and I can't remember that thing was called DIMS or something like that, and you can search for it, and it'll show you the pages. Here they are talking about it in chat. Picks up IRC as well. Here's the DIMS page. So you don't have to remember everything that, you know, it just remembers for you. Atlas Recall free right now, so it's a good time to take advantage of it. It's Mac and iOS only, although it will eventually, and I certainly plan to put it on all my devices, because then you'll have a kind of... His goal ultimately is to say, you know, I do this, we all do this, we have multiple copies of a single file, one on our local computer, one maybe on Dropbox, all over the place. He says you could have one copy of anything and know where it is, and it will look like a unified file system on your computer. You don't care where it is, as long you can access it anytime. So I think this is a really good idea. Atlas.co, if you'd like to try it out for free. We are out of time, but thank you, everybody, for being here. Rene Ritchie at imore.com. He's a busy guy. He's wearing his WWDC cap.
Yep.
Getting ready for June.
Already, Leo. It's MWC first, though.
What's WC?
MWC, sorry.
Mobile World Congress. You're going to Barcelona.
I'm not going to go, but we have a whole team going, and that is a lot of organization.
Will Apple be there?
They are. I mean, they're always there, but they're very seldom officially there.
Right. Yeah, they don't make iPhone announcements there, that's for sure.
And there'll probably be somebody with an iPhone 8 dummy in a case somewhere.
Right, right.
Every year.
iMore.com, and if you want to do the podcast thing at iMore, they have some really great ones. Just click the menu on the left and go to podcasts. Rene's on many of these, although he's cutting back the iMore show, Debug. Last episode of Debug, right, or no?
It's going on hiatus.
Hiatus episode of Debug.
Yes.
And the new one, Apple Talk, which is really great. You've got so much stuff on here. I-M-O-R-E, imore.com. Great site to keep up with Mac news, but also how to use your Apple stuff better. And keep up on Rene's Apple Watch bands. You bought any new ones recently?
You know what? I actually was thinking about this today. I fell so much in love with a single deployment that I haven't really been switching my Apple bands as much as I used to.
Maybe I should get that one.
Mm-hmm. It's just so comfortable and easy to use. You unclip it and it comes right off.
Oh, it's expensive though, right?
It is. I'm sure people make cheaper versions of single deployments, it's got the best of a link and the best of a leather kind of sewn together.
The best of a link and the best of a leather sewn together.
Very Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss or Chuck D. I'm not sure which one it was channeling.
It's your birthday.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. He's a traveling man. All over the place. Maybe be here for, I think he's going to be here for the new Screensavers to co-host with me at the end of the month. That'll be really fun.
Looks like that's going to happen. It's going to be a long walk from the San Francisco Bay to the new studio, but I've got my heavy boots on.
Good.
I understand
we'll
that
San Francisco
is real amenable to hitchhikers like me. So
we'll get you a bicycle. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. You can tune in live. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Participate. Or just do it at your convenience after the fact. Video on demand is always made available for all of our shows at our website, in this case, twit.tv/MBAW, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. We've got apps on every platform, Roku, Apple TV, even Windows Phone. They're everywhere. Thanks for being here. We will see you next time. But now, I'm sorry to say, time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.